Accession number 13856, reel 4.
Commander here, reel 4.
Reel 4, good lord. Well, Sheffield, yes. The failure to tell the Ark Royal that Sheffield had been detailed to shadow the Bismarck resulted in very nearly another colossal tragedy. Of course, the two Swordfish squadrons in very doubtful weather. The sea was enormous. The ship was pitching up and down. It was no mean thing to get 24, or was it 20, Swordfish with a torpedo into the sky in formation. The cloud base was about 500 feet. The sleeting wind and the whole thing was one of those grey, terribly anti-morale, not a very cheerful sight to go and do the job at all. Plying off about 60, 70 miles or so to where the Bismarck was reported to be. And so off they went. And staggering through cloud, they managed to maintain formation until breaking cloud, when they thought they were in the vicinity of the Bismarck, they see in the grey muck below a ship plowing through the sea, throwing spray all over the place. So they immediately deploy and go into the attack and drop their torpedoes. Oh, well, with tremendous commendable, the captain of the Sheffield, a man of great resolution and intelligence, ordered his guns to stay silent. Even if they did get torpedoed, there's no point in shooting down the Swordfish. Of course, they attacked the Swordfish, and by the grace of God, once again, British ingenuity failed. Their torpedoes that they had got on all were armed with magnetic torpedoes. With the result, they were set to run below the known draft of the Bismarck, which was, say, 30 foot, and so they were dropped to go run at about 35. So they all ran underneath the Sheffield, who's presumably been degaussed or something by that time. Anyway, they failed to explode. Otherwise, tragedy was missed by such hairbreadth. And we weren't amused, nor was anybody else. The Swordfish came back and said, my God, they realized their error, because they got closer to the ship. It's all very well at a range of about 3 miles, and the visibility is only 3.5 miles. You don't see very much. You've got to drop your torpedo at half a mile or something, and as you're getting closer and closer, you're not looking to see whether it's got iron swastikas all over it or Union Jacks. It's your target. And you go in there, and you drop your torpedo, and you think, my God, thank God I'm alive still. You can't blame the air crew for this sort of thing. They all landed back. Of course, they learned with the realization that they had attacked the wrong ship. But that didn't stop them. I mean, they battled too, so the entire ship. They were battled to and rearmed with torpedoes with contact heads this time to launch a second strike. Well, they had to do it because it was getting dark. I must say, I can't take my hat off more to these tremendous pilots and these shaggy old planes going through once again the same murky treatment, that awful feeling that they've made balls of it once.
But you were with 808 flying Fulmers. Flying Skuas.
I took absolutely no air part, no flying part in the Bismarck. I just sat. I was, because I was a Royal Marine, I had cipher clearance. I was on the flag deck as opposed to the bridge. Flag deck is where the Admiral would be prowling about, and of course I had access to all the cipher logs and so on, or rather a strange quirk of circumstance, but our Fulmers being fighters and they were not employed, so they rearmed, and then and the second strike went in. Well, this time there was no doubt whatsoever when they saw the Bismarck. It was a great, of course, Bismarck open fire and all that. And there's some dispute as to which aircraft did it. I think it was a chap called Beale, but hazy memories of the past. Sub-Lieutenant Beale. Anyway, because he got detached and he came in after the main strike had gone in and missed, or they'd had some near misses and so on. And it was, anyway, whoever says whoever did the actual drop that messed up the whole of the steering arrangements of Bismarck, doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter that 99 out of the 100 torpedoes dropped, only one achieved a significant blow. What matters is that as a result of this thing, Bismarck had to turn around. She was unsteerable, and she had to turn around. Instead of steering east, she had to steer northwest. And was straight into the arms of the enemy. Her fate was sealed the moment that aerial torpedo was dropped. Now, it didn't matter a damn whether Tovey had 100,000 battleships hanging around or none. It made no difference whatsoever. Hitler was sending signals saying anybody who managed to restore the integrity of the steering gears would get the Iron Cross about 3,000 times multiplied by brilliance and everything else. And the dreadful drama on board the Bismarck has to be realized. This was quite some battleship then. And it was inevitable. Well, of course, the panic went on. And, of course, they're having, you know, and feeling revenge by the gunnery world and all that sort of thing. But anyway, their prey had been turned. The prey was then at the mercy whoever wanted to pick it up. So in strides the home fleet. They opened fire at 18,000 yards. Bismarck replies. They know it's the end. Their morale's down. Of course, they know there was no future. If they'd gone up and sent a picket boat across with a little party of Marines, they probably handed over the ship anyway and said safe conduct to a neutral port. Anything might have happened, you could have said. But the fate was sealed. Then they fired at 18,000 yards. What did they do? After they'd sort of more or less bashed most of the ship's firing ability, because there was about three or four of them all firing, they closed the range down to 6,000 or 7,000 yards. I can only imagine that the spirit of Nelson and close quarter gunnery was still invading them. They wanted to see the blood spurt. They wanted to get to close quarters. But of course, all they were doing was closing the range. As a result, instead of their shells being fired up to an awful super height up there and plunging straight downwards, with armor-piercing shells would go through almost anything and they explode right down in the bowels of the ship. They were firing over what they called open sights. They were firing horizontal guns. They blew the upper works almost into a shambles. Nothing lived, nothing survived on the upper deck. But down below, she was still in water, integrity was not breached at all. So then, as I tell you now, I couldn't believe it. I could hear the bombardment going on. We were about 30 miles away in Ark Royal with Renown. I could hear the great guns firing. And there came a signal from CNC Home Fleet, unable to sink Bismarck by gunfire. Now, it's no good saying, all right, they want to forget that signal, because they don't report it anywhere. I read it. I read it on the flag deck of Ark Royal, because it was repeated. For once now, they repeated some of their signals to the carrier. I have a little embroidery here, because Toby was in terrible stew, because he was running out of fuel, and he didn't know what to do if his ships were lying stationary in the Atlantic with all the submarines around. I can't confirm this, but there was a little addendum that said request instructions. because he didn't want to put his foot wrong. He didn't want to tell him that, he thought that all was in his hand. And this signal came back from Churchill, who said, "What devil?" He said, "Quest instructions," he said, "send to him, sink the Bismarck." Well, so what happened? The ship was lying stationary in the water. So they sent in, he sent in Dorsetshire to fire torpedoes. Now, there are some graphic pictures of Dorsetshire firing torpedoes, not pictures, but accounts or diagrams and so forth. And I don't believe one bit of it, not that I was able to observe. But I can tell you this, that when Bismarck was lying dead in the water, upstairs in the air were 21 swordfish, each with a 19-inch torpedo with contact heads. And you would have thought, you just might have thought, that the CNC would have appreciated that the whole business of bringing Bismarck to bay was done by a swordfish. They could have handed the palm or the glory or the disaster or the distasteful task of the finish, the coup de grace, by saying to the Ark Royal, send your torpedo bombers in to sink the Bismarck. And I don't believe any battleship, even the Bismarck, could have survived 21 19-inch torpedoes fired at a ship stationary in the waters without any opposition. What happened? They sent the Dorchester in, and the Ark Royal squadrons were ordered to ditch their torpedoes safe into the Atlantic Ocean because the sea was so rough they could not land on with a torpedo. Now, I'd like you just to try and imagine the shock, the indignation, almost the anger. I still feel this anger. Oh dear. How could someone be so dreadfully ununderstanding and sending those silly signals? So they went in to rescue the survivors. They picked up a few. Then there was a submarine scare, and they were all ordered to scurry away. In any case, Tovey couldn't hang around anymore. He got no fuel left, so he had to shove off. As an interesting side note, years later, when I was in a job in Germany, in Kiel, I met the damaged Number 3 damage control officer, who was one of the few. There was about 103 survivors picked up from the Bismarck. He was one of them. And I had a chat with him. He's quite a pleasant chap. I mean, he said, in his broken English, he said, you think the Bismarck? He says, no. I said, I think the Bismarck. He said he personally went down and blew charges and opened sea cocks. Well, I can't argue with that. I don't know whether one goes around laying charges in such an action in vital places, in double bottoms, you know what ships are like. I can understand him trying to open sea cocks. There's no doubt at all that the Bismarck's watertight integrity had not been damaged. Whether Dorsetshire's torpedoes, whether there's any real record, they may have gone off, they may have blown side jagged holes here and there, but it was nothing like the Titanic when one more iceberg goes and does the whole thing. There was not that ship. If she was so subdivided into compartments. So who sunk the Bismarck? Was it the third damage control officer? Or was it just goddamn luck? Anyway, it certainly wasn't much fun for Terence Shaw, who was leading that flight of swordfish, ordered to ditch their torpedoes after all their effort. So we wended our way back to Gibraltar. The home fleet struggled through a certain amount of bombing. One or two destroyers got sunk on the way back, and they got back. They were, when they got back, they were all treated, here come the conquering heroes, hooray, hooray, Hood's been avenged, and their euphoria, or they were regarded the palm of sinking the Bismarck. Both watches, 48 hours leave to both watches in rotation, and all we went to congratulations. And what happened to poor old Ark and poor old Somerville in renown, who'd been ordered not even to have a hand in it? What happened to them? We went back to Gib. We were cheered in the harbour. And back to 4 hours' notice. Nothing.
I think you were in the Ark Royal when it was sunk. Can you tell me what your memories of that are, please?
Oh, sadness. Terrible sadness. Everybody knew it was the last trip. We were reinforcing aircraft to Malta. We'd done that. We'd flown them all off. We were in 30 miles of Gib. Landing on my flight, Fulmer's actually, Peter Goodfellow. We'd landed on the Swordfish. It was tea time. There was Gib in the distance. You see it. And I was walking on the flight deck with Frankie Lewin, the squadron commander, wondering what was going to happen next, because we knew that the ship was long overdue for a refit. You know that Ark Royal had 500 tons of concrete in her double bottoms from bombing damage and all those other things that she'd been through. You know that she hadn't had a single refit since she'd been launched in 38, 39, 40, 41. No ship had steamed harder and faster, been subjected to more bombing than that poor old vessel. But no, it had no, and to plug up all the leaks and things, the watertight hatches, half of them wouldn't fit. They were all distorted. The whole ship wanted to be reinforced or chained. It was all right, close watertight doors. You try, I said. But you know, all these things never get sort of shown up. And who's responsible? Well, not the. You can't say that the admirals and the battleships, they didn't have any such exposure. The enemy were far more intelligent than to bother about bombing battleships. They didn't give a damn about battleships. They wanted the carriers. They knew the carriers were the most dangerous thing that floated in the waters. So poor old Ark got very, very battered. She really needed it. So when one torpedo struck at about 4 o'clock that afternoon, well, we didn't think that was the end either, good old Ark. But what with all her battered doors and her dead bottoms and so on, it was too much in the end. And about 12 hours later, she sank. She rolled over on her side, turned upside down, and did a nosedive. With my guns, I may say. With my guns and all my knitting I've been doing. Nobody believes me now. I knitted something about 15 feet long. It was about a foot wide. And the only reason why it went on and on was I never knew how to cast off. But still, there it was. It all went to the bottom.
How did you get off the Ark Royal?
Yes, well, a lot of people jumped off. There was a lot of panic. People did throw in, release the Kali rafts, and there was a stream of boats of these life-saving things. Because we were still doing about 8 knots, 12 knots, whatever it was, and slowing down slowly as we leant over about 14, 15 degrees, which is much more alarming than it sounds, because, you know, it's unusual. Anyway, we all stood on the up, you know, the high side, thinking that our weight would have some influence. But, you know, well, they always keep the boat upright. But it didn't make much difference. So we sailed on there, and we, more or less, everything gone out. The lights had gone out. All power stopped. No communications, nothing. Nothing worked. So we wandered about there, wondering, well, what was next? A lot of chaps were jumping over the sides, you know, doing silly things like that. So, Vincey, my next memory was Captain Morn deciding to go aft. I see him now walking swiftly from the bridge along the flight deck, shouting. Well, you could see him saying, "Abandon ship," with his lips, but he couldn't hear anything because he completely lost his voice. Poor chap. It was his ship. Abandon ship, he was trying to say. So I swear that, well, we said, "Oh, we'd better abandon ship." I went down through the hangars and I found a lot of people had ripped open the flotation gear, the rafts that you have in aeroplanes. You know, you've got a handle of release that normally if an aircraft falls in the sea, the salt water will cause the dinghy to blow out from where it's contained, or you have a hand release. Well, someone thought, well, we'd have some more life-saving equipment, so they went and pulled these releases, and all of our lovely aeroplanes, all tethered onto the deck in the hangars, had all their life equipment sticking out of their sides. Of course, what they hadn't realized is that by blowing them up, they couldn't get them through the access doors, so they stayed inside. That was that impression. I thought I was wearing my oldest uniform. My cabin, alas, was on the starboard side and was underwater. There was no way I could get down to... Everything was underwater. And my guns, oh dear, it didn't occur to me then. So I went down to the quarter deck. Well, ships were coming, destroyers were coming along to take off survivors, which is quite handy. I mean, you just jump from one side to the other. And blow me down out of the hatch in the deck, because that's the high side, you see, it was all right, came the paymaster commander with two huge suitcases. So I said to him with the greatest pride, "Pay, I see you're taking every precaution," I said. Which I felt was an ambiguous remark. I really meant, well, he's going for the rat is deserting the sinking ship and making sure he's got all his bits and pieces with him, which is exactly what he had. And I didn't know this, actually, at the time, so I helped him with his suitcases to get across to Legion, or was it Lively, that were taking us all on the thing. I say one of the bags, and I'd have fallen in the water, because the gap was not that big, about 3 foot or 4 foot. So nothing more was heard about this. He got, and in due course, I just stepped across from the Ark Royal's upper side onto the forecastle of this destroyer, where we blissfully were sent down to the wardroom, got pied, and forgot all about the thing. Because they were, at that time, all the other destroyers that weren't taking off survivors were going doing a ring around poor old Ark, which was like that. Dropping depth charges. Oh, God, they went on dropping depth charges for about 3 hours. I mean, this submarine was fired an electric torpedo about 5 miles away or something. So I don't know what the hell, they kill a lot of fish. That's about all they did. So nothing more after that. Of course, we got back into Jib and we were all berthed in Argus, which was happened to be there at the time. And until about 6 months later, you won't believe it, but 6 months later, I got an OHMS from the Admiralty, and it was a bill, a wardroom bill, to messing until lunchtime on the 13th of November. They hardly dare charge me for tea. And you know, we had day books, which, you know about day books? Anyway, every drink you order, you sign with a chip. And it had all been done. That chap, that paymaster commander, had got the wardroom wine books, he got the officer's pay chits, he got everything. And I'd had, because it was really a farewell deal, wasn't flying at all, I had about 5 or 6 gins and a bottle of wine at lunchtime. Of course, you know, that's why I joined the Navy, in order to have a decent life while fighting a war. It was all itemized, and here was a ship being sunk, all my uniform, all my vesting and guns had all gone. I'd been done for the right up to the within 3 hours of the time the ship was torpedoed. I thought, well, that really is getting clever, isn't it? I got awarded £49 compensation for being sunk. Because they said all officers at sea, going to sea in certain waters, you see, was only allowed to have £50 worth of gear on board. They're not allowed to have anything, and all this stuff was. And this was quoting an AFO, and I pointed out that the AFO was printed about 3 days before the Ark was sunk. How did you think that, in all honesty, A, to deliver that AFO on board, and B, to have it absorbed so that we, the officers, who got about 5 or 10 times as much gear as put down there, could, and where would we put it? What, in jib? With whom? Somewhere in a warehouse? They gave me another £100 after that. It's all the same, £140 in 1941 was a knock-off fee. It really was too bad. I know something else niggling in my mind about the Ark, but I've forgotten it at the moment. You want to know the story of the Rodney?
Yes.
Have you had this before?
I've interviewed someone who was on the Rodney at the death of Bismarck, you mean?
I'm trying to remember all the funny things that you might amuse people rather than just think war is all horror, because it's not all horror at all. But Rodney came into harbour, and the buzz was that there was something to do with sheep. So everybody, you know about the sheep story. So everybody lined the whole harbour. When Rodney sailed in, everybody went, bah, bah. Everybody thought it was fun. Because we sailors got generous tots around and that sort of thing. And we had our gin. And so we all went, bah.
This was because of a sailor on board who was convicted for having relations with the sheep, I think.
Yes. A stoker. A stoker from HMS Rodney, when they were in Scapa Flow, he was blind drunk, coming out of a pub late at night, and he was stumbling through the snow, and he came upon what he thought was a sheep. So he had his evil way with his sheep. It turned out to be a wren in a sort of a sheep woolly coat. So wren naturally complained about being raped by a bloody stoker. And that was his defense. So everyone said, well, bad luck, old boy. And there was you won't believe it, but there was a port order, you know, it was Admiralty Fleet order. There was a port order, jib port order, came round. Under no circumstances would any form of animal noises be allowed from any ship when any other ship is apparently a subject of such a noise. I couldn't believe my ears, you know, my eyes, to see that they'd taken it so seriously. But, of course, Rodney, we all laughed. It was fun.
How did you get back to the UK after the loss of the Ark Royal?
Yes. I got back in the Nelson. Nelson, we ran in the most dreadful gale. I must say, I was quite glad to be in a big ship. It was Force 12, or something, in the Bay of Biscay. Several destroyers got pooped and had to turn around and go back. But Nelson ploughed